This edition of the Kenai Conversation was recorded on Wednesday, October 9th. If you hear the phone number or dated references in the show, please just ignore them. It's time for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Jay Barrett. And today we are going to be talking about, something that I recognized it when it first got started as the Forget-Me-Not Coalition for Veterans. But now it's the Alaska Coalition, and we're going to talk about that and how they do all the stuff they do. I'm sorry, I'm looking for something very important here. Megan's last name, Megan James. Hi, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I caught a little bit of what you were talking about during last night's Borough Assembly meeting. You addressed the Assembly and spoke to them a while about some of the things that you've got going on, and then tonight or tomorrow night, you're going to be speaking before the Soldotna City Council too.
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow, you're real busy.
Yeah, hopping around and letting people know about what we do, and hopefully getting some folks connected to services here in the Kenai area.
Okay. Well, first, you before we were on the air, you're telling me you were involved at the beginning of the Forget Me Not Coalition. I remember when that formed, I was down in Kodiak, and there was some activity there, and I think I did a story or two, at least read some. Tell me about how that started, and you know what? Don't do that. First, tell me what your coalition does right now.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
The Alaska Coalition for Veterans and Military Families has three pillars of service. We collaborate. So we work with service providers throughout the state of Alaska, employment. So employers, behavioral health providers, in rural Alaska, we also work with medical providers, and we just make sure that we share services and share information so that we can better serve our service members, veterans, and their families. We also educate. So we go around the state and we educate our providers as well as our communities on things like military cultural competency, suicide prevention, and other issues that affect the military community. And then the third pillar of service is advocacy. So we work with our state legislators and our congressional delegates on issues that are important to our veterans and military families to make sure that they have all the support and services that they need to thrive in Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a shopping cart full of things.
It is.
More than just a little handbasket of things. How did the need for this come about and be recognized? What was the genesis of the coalition?
Yeah. So the coalition started back in 2011 under the former name Alaska Forget-Me-Not Coalition. And we recognized a need because the VA and Department of Defense and the state of Alaska can only do so much because of federal and state regulations, but some needs were still not being met. And we knew that there were people in the community, businesses, nonprofit organizations, and other agencies in the community that could help meet those needs. So we came together to kind of figure out how we could work with those entities to be able to fill those needs. And so now we have a partnership with the state of Alaska, Department of Veterans Affairs, the Department of Defense, all the installations in Alaska, and also Veterans Affairs here in Alaska. And we just, when they have any issues that they, you know, it's a solvable problem, but we can't do it, do you have someone for us? So then that way we can come step in and help that individual or that agency help their client.
Wow. So you're like a fixer.
Yeah. I refer to myself as a traffic director a lot.
I bet. So if I were to give out the phone number, would you be interested in answering maybe a few general questions? You know, not specific cases or anything, but general questions, people wanting some direction here or there?
Absolutely. I'll take any of the questions.
Oh, great. Well, our phone number, 283-8414, if you'd like to call in and talk with Megan James with the Alaska Coalition for Veterans and Military Families. Give us a ring, and we'll talk about some of these programs. You know, Megan, the thing that's always gotten me flummoxed is that, you know, in America, we're pretty gung-ho about our military and our service members, and we, you know, we try to take good care of them. We give them the best equipment. But then over and over again, we see that we're ignoring the spouses at home. We're ignoring veterans when they get home. We're ignoring their emotional state, the rash of suicides among returning veterans is a national disgrace. And I'm glad to see your organization is helping stem some of that. But, why is this a thing and what can we do to stop it? And is that part of the coalition's mission?
It is part of our coalition mission. And I think that there's a couple of different things that come into play. One is less than 1% of the United States population is affiliated with the military anyway. So it's a very small population of people that are military affiliated. Here in Alaska, it's a little bit different because we do have the highest per capita of military and veteran families in the country. So we see it more regularly in Alaska, which makes us stand out a little bit. So that's one of the contributing factors, is it's such a small percentage. And I think the general population, and not just in Alaska, but throughout the country, has a hard time connecting with a community of people that are small, and the cultural differences are significantly different in the military than it is in the civilian community. And we found over and over again that the civilian community wants to support. I think it's an issue of they're not understanding how and what is the best approach. And then when our veterans return home or transition from active duty military to civilian life, now they're transitioning from a very regimented culture and a regimented way of life to what feels like anarchy, because we can do whatever we want, whenever we want. We don't have our, first sergeant telling us we can't go do something anymore. And so I think that there's definitely a cultural barrier, which leads to isolationism. And the current nature of our society with technology, the way it is we're not getting out and talking to one another. And so now our service members and veterans are isolating more and more and more, which then breeds depression issues, anxiety issues. It might exacerbate some pre-existing conditions, or it might exacerbate some of their trauma that they had while they were in service. So it's a myriad of issues that kind of come together in a head. And our mission is to educate the civilian population so that way they can communicate with our veterans and our service members. And that way our veterans and service members feel like they are being heard.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
The situation in Alaska, how does it compare to the lower 48? I know that per capita we have a higher percentage of former service members. But are the problems that they're experiencing, are they occurring in Alaska at the same per capita rate or greater?
That's a great question. I think there are some things that are happening at a greater rate and some things that are happening at a less frequently. I think that the way Alaska is, we're a welcoming community. I think most of our communities are very welcoming to people from outside of the state, because most of us are transplants. I'm a transplant. I'm an Army brat. That's how we got up here. And we chose to stay because of how welcoming the communities were. So that makes it a little bit easier to overcome some of those barriers. But again, we have some of the same issues that everyone else has. We have a very high suicide rate. And again, I think that in Alaska, maybe it's not necessarily a cultural isolation. It's also a very geographic isolation. And that's not something that's easily overcome, unfortunately. But again, if we can get out to them, and then the third thing too, I would say is a lot of veterans come up here because they don't want anything to do with it anymore. They want to be completely separated. They don't want the services, and that's okay too. We can't force this on anybody, but we just want people to know that we're here when they do decide to make that step, if they do need anything. And it can be something as big as mental health resources and they need, some serious psychiatric care, or it can be something as little as, hey, my paycheck didn't make it to the end, till next paycheck and I need food. Where do I go? It could be a one-time thing or it could be an ongoing thing. We're here.
Mm-hmm. How do people get in touch with you? Are you based in Anchorage? You have satellite offices? Are you online?
Yeah, well, we're a one-man show.
Really?
One-woman show, yeah. Yeah, but what happens is we really promote a no-wrong-door policy. If somebody is looking for services, they can always go to our website, which is akcvmf.org. They can go to our Facebook page, which is Alaska Coalition for Veterans and Military Families on Facebook. They can call our offices at 907-334-0874 or 0873. We've had people stop me in the grocery store. And then we also work with our providers too. So if somebody goes to one of their providers, like one of the community-based outpatient clinics or a tribal clinic or anywhere else that they're a partner with us, and that partner provider doesn't have all the answers, instead of saying, no, I don't have them, and sending them on their way, they elevate it to me or one of our other partners. And so we build this network of safe, and it creates that safety net.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I like that. How are you funded?
We are currently funded through a grant with the VFW, so Veterans of Foreign Wars, and the Office of Veterans Affairs through the state of Alaska. Became a 501c3 at the beginning of the year, and so now we accept donations, and we're kind of branching into that fund development realm to make this going. And we recognize the need, and there's far too much work for one person to do. And so we've been working, my board and I have been working with the University of Alaska to set up an intern program, and then also access additional funding through several of our state foundations as well as national foundations.
Wow. I'm still stunned that you're the only person there.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah. What's your caseload?
I try not to take on too many individual cases because I do have all the bigger things, but I usually have a caseload about 5 to 10 clients per week. I am a trained veteran service officer, so that way I can also get their claims taken care of. And I do more resource referral so that way I could keep my caseload light and keep the cases moving through the door into services.
Mm-hmm. What's the most frustrating case that you've come up against? Something with, I don't know, the most red tape or the most back and forth, the thing you had to struggle most to fix for somebody?
I had... a client who was having some homelessness issues, having some employment issues, and by nature of his service and time in service, he wasn't considered a veteran through the VA, so he wasn't eligible for their services. And we really, really struggled, and I still struggle with this client, and it's been about 7 or 8 months just trying to get him, you know, placed. But we were able to succeed in getting him a series of interviews and getting him a job. Thankfully, there's no mental health issues that are affecting him. But, you know, getting him a job was the first step. And because of his instability elsewhere, it's been hard to kind of hold down that job. So I try to work with the employers to let them know that, you know, this particular veteran needs additional stability and support. And that's not uncommon. Most of our, especially very, very new veterans, if this is their first civilian job, need that extra support as they could try to navigate this new way of life for themselves.
I can imagine, you know, a kid goes into the military at 18, mm-hmm. spends, you know, 4 or 6 or however many years in, comes back out. They really are getting their first civilian job, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very weird. Some like, oh, I worked at a gas station until I graduated high school, and, you know, or I worked at a little mom and pop cafe, and those are great jobs. I worked at a mom and pop cafe for 12 years, but if you only did that for a couple of years and then you go into boot camp and this regimented life, you forget that. And you, those skills that you learn in customer service are gone because you're not using them in the military. You know, you're using your communication skills, but, you know, a little bit gruffer way of communicating with one another.
Right. I can imagine. Let me get the phone number out again. 283-8414 if you'd like to talk about military and veterans and family issues. We have the executive director of the coalition that's kind of in charge of all that, Megan James, here. The number again, 283-8414. I have it on good authority. Our phones are working today.
Awesome.
Yeah. We had new gizmos put in here.
Oh.
So they didn't work for a week.
Well, that's all right. New technology. We were just talking about that. It takes about a week to get used to it all.
Right. So tell me, last night at the assembly, and then tomorrow night at the Soldotna City Council, what is it you're telling them?
I'm just giving them that overview of what the coalition does, all the things that we do, and how we can pivot to the need of an individual community. And just really promoting that no wrong door. Like, if you get a client or a service provider that really doesn't have the answer, doesn't know where to turn, turn to us. We can help you find that. The unique thing about the coalition too, is we work with all veterans, regardless of discharge status. We have helped many, many veterans get their discharge statuses upgraded if they were eligible for it, and then get them access to benefits. We have helped mediate issues with the VA before. So, I mean, we pivot to the need of the individual and to the community.
All right. Well, we have a phone call here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Jay. This is Sharon Red Baron.
Oh, hi, Sharon. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know if you know this, but I'm a veteran, and I think it's awesome to have a place where, you know, people that are hitting brick walls with different agencies, places they can go to possibly get somebody that can advocate for help. We definitely need those, not just for the veterans, but also for the families that are at home and need support. My question for your guest is, has she, I understand what she does. One of the things is make sure to get your information to domestic violence shelters. Many of those women and children are dependents or veterans themselves, so that they have another resource that they could possibly use.
Oh, thank you, Sharon.
That's something that she's been doing. There's a lot of agencies out there that may not know. I did not know this existed until this morning, and I'm a veteran, and I have a very positive outcome with the VA system here.
Oh, that's good to know. Megan, have you been working with these organizations?
Yeah, we're connected to the shelters in Anchorage and Fairbanks right now. And we're, again, it's a one-man show. So, and there's so many service providers and so many services in Alaska. And so making those connections is a full-time job pretty much. But I will definitely take that into consideration and reaching out to other domestic violence organizations throughout Alaska, because you're right, a lot of their clientele are affiliated with the military, and we're working with several of the National Guard chaplains to try to help with their issues and making sure that we can create a safe space for the families while they mediate some of these domestic violence issues and get them taken care of, both on the part of the service member and on the part of the spouse and their family. So yeah, thank you very much for that, Sharon. And I'm glad you had a positive experience with the VA. A lot of folks look at the VA as the bad guy, and they're really not. It's bureaucracy, and yes, people make mistakes, and there are some shortcomings to it. But what I try to tell people is, if you can advocate for yourself, that it's an easier process to go through. And if you can't advocate for yourself, find someone who can, and we can help navigate that system for you.
Absolutely. Well, I worked in a shelter where it's not part of their intake to ask if they're a veteran. But as a veteran myself, I found that when I started asking if they would disclose, that many of the women were veterans and were not receiving any help at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, didn't know that they even would be able to get help. But just to be able to go and find out if there's anything out there for them was a big thing.
Yeah.
So it's been an educational thing with advocacy, is to ask that question.
You hit the nail on the head, Sharon. We advocate to ask the question. And we go beyond the ask the question if you are a veteran, because some, especially female service members, don't necessarily feel that they're a veteran. Or like my father didn't deploy to an actual war zone, so he didn't feel he was a veteran. If you have served in the United States Armed Forces or the Coast Guard, you are a veteran, and we can help you. And so we really advocate to ask the question, have you served in the armed forces, or are you a family member of a of an individual that has served in the armed forces. So then that way that broadens your availability to resources. You hit the nail on the head.
Well, thank you for your information. I did not know that you existed until this morning, and I was listening to my favorite.
Oh, that's awesome. He's a pretty
and
cool guy.
You are a grassroots organization getting started, and people, she's going to need some donations, so get it out there.
Oh, thank you for that.
Thanks for the call, Sharon.
Thanks for taking my call.
She's a volunteer on the air as well, and she has a great country show, which is tonight.
Oh, and I'm a country music fanatic, so yes. I'll be tuning in, Sharon.
7 to 9, yeah. You know, you're talking about education. Who do you educate? I mean, we're educating our listeners. I've been educated. Sharon's been educated. But do you go to, I'm thinking, you know, like just before a class of soldiers is discharged. I mean, you go and talk to them or... you know, do you talk to, who do you educate?
Yeah, that's a great question. When you're talking about individual, we have two forms of users. We have our indirect users, which are our service providers, because, I mean, they're usually a veteran, but they're, you know, working with us because they're dealing with a direct user, which is the veteran or service member, family member. And we do have partners that go to what's called the Transition Assistance Program. And active duty service members are required to go through TAP. And we do have partners that go to TAP every month. I think they host it on each of the installations. And there's usually about 25 to 30 people that go through that program. The caveat is to that is as a service member is transitioning, they have so many boxes to check before they can get out of the military. So some of the times it's just another check on their box. But I'm really happy to say that a lot of our transitioning programs here in Alaska are well aware of us, and we do work with them regularly, for resource and referral through that as well. So when we talk about educating, we talk about educating our general community, our service providers, our civilian service providers, as well as our state legislators, that these are the issues that we're finding with our caseload. So that's more of the education that we really focus on.
Oh, wow. But you know, I wanted to ask this for about a half an hour. Is your program based on other programs elsewhere in the nation, or did you guys sort of develop this here?
That's a great question. The National Guard Bureau has a program called Joining Community Forces, and it's been around for decades. And there's some in other states, such as Illinois, that's been around for about 30 years. And we didn't have one here in Alaska. And then in the VA, they have what's called Community Veteran Engagement Boards, which is a very similar format. And so in Alaska, we decided that instead of having a JCF and a CVEB, that we were going to combine the two, and that's how the coalition was initially born, is this contract between the two or agreement between the two organizations or structures is actually a better word, to create a single organization for the entire state.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, we have another phone call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm a veteran or a former veteran.
And, you're always a veteran.
Pardon?
You're always a veteran. You're not a former veteran.
Well, good for you. You go see the doctor that gives you pills that you said you did not want. You go see the doctor, the VA doctor, who gives you pills that you said will stop your heart. You go see the counselor at the outreach center who screams in your face until she drools out of her mouth and sets you up with all the labels you need. You go deal with that and tell people they're not the bad guy. This is why veterans don't go to the VA, because they're tired of being sent away. They're tired of failure. You go to college and get the check like 10 months later when the college wants to be paid in 3 months. You go do that, and you go tell, there's nothing you can do. You can get all feel-good, touchy-feely, and hang labels on people and send them off to behavioral things. And I heard the last end of your say-so at the assembly meeting yesterday, where you just, like, everyone assumes that a homeless person has mental problems. There goes the labels. And then there go your civil rights. So if you want that, and you're a veteran on the Kenai Peninsula, go see those guys. If you're tired of your pulse, If you need your sanity and your freedoms taken away, walk right in the door.
Oh, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Not everybody has good experiences, I take it.
No, no. And the VA has struggled with that for a long time. And that's one of the reasons why we want to be available to our service members and our veterans, is we've had folks that walked in the door that have had serious paperwork issues, and they are not getting the care that they need. And so their disabilities from that they've incurred while they were in service are being exacerbated. And that's when we start elevating it up to our state office director. And we have a direct connection with the director for Alaska VA healthcare system here in Alaska. And we start working at those higher levels. Unfortunately, when folks have those negative experiences, is they just don't want to deal with it anymore. And so if they don't want to deal with it anymore, it makes it hard for us to go in and kind of help mediate that problem and fix it for them. But if they do reach out to us, then we start kind of digging through the paperwork and digging through and finding where the mistakes were made and start alleviating those issues, so that that way the veteran can get the care that they want and need for their whatever the issue is.
Mm-hmm. The caller seemed to be of the opinion perhaps that there are systemic issues within the VA. I recall a few years ago there was a lot of news stories about Walter Reed Medical Center mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C., about mm-hmm. Deficiencies there serving veterans. And, you know, this sort of thing comes up pretty regularly about veterans clinics and access to them and such. I know when I was in Kodiak, there was a big uproar about being able to schedule getting from Kodiak to Anchorage mm-hmm. for these sort of things. And it had a lot to do with the ferries and the planes and everything. But there's not much you personally can
no,
do about,
unfortunately.
About systemic issues.
No,
right?
There's not that I can do on our level. But I will say we do have an excellent, excellent working with relationship with the VA here in Alaska. Dr. Ballard does regular town halls and travels the state. And
I'm sorry, who is he?
Dr. Ballard is the director for the Alaska VA healthcare system in Alaska. And he does regular town halls where people can come in and explain what their issues are. And he will sit there with his team on the spot and try to mediate those issues immediately. So if there's an issue that an individual is having, I highly, highly recommend going to those town halls and explaining what your issue is. And then Dr. Ballard will do his very, very best to mediate it. And I can say from personal experience, the VA here in Alaska is a lot different than the VA in the lower 48. Dr. Ballard is also a veteran and deeply, deeply cares about our veterans here in Alaska and wants to get them taken care of, but understands it's bureaucracy and there's red tape and it's frustrating. And it's incredibly frustrating when you're hurting, either physically or whatever, and trying to navigate that system is very difficult. And so he works very hard. His team works very hard. And then he works with organizations like mine and our veteran service organizations, the VFW, American Legion, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Disabled Veterans of America, and Vietnam Veterans of America to alleviate those issues. So there's a group of us. There's no one way into the VA, and there's no one advocate for the VA. There's many of us, and we all work together. So if you want to try again, I know that the first step wasn't a positive one, but or maybe the first several steps weren't positive ones, but if a veteran would like to try again, we are here to try to make that a positive experience for them.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to try to help them navigate the mm-hmm. systemic problems. I mean,
yes.
It's a systemic issue, but you're going to try to be there for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Is it, it seems convoluted mm-hmm. that our veterans are federal veterans, though some have worked for the state as National Guardsmen. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and veterans are taken care of with federal money, but it's routed through the state. That couldn't help you, right? I mean, that just seems too convoluted.
It's very complicated, the whole system. And then when you start talking about National Guard members, you have them on Title 10 orders or Title 32 orders. So it's very, very complicated. And so an individual's benefits or disability compensation or however it works out, it's very, very much individualized based on that person's service. So I never will just say, hey, you might be eligible for X, Y, or Z, because I've not seen the DD Form 214, which is what you get when you separate from the military. So we just recommend people bringing their most recent copy of the DD 214. If they don't have a copy, there's a way to request it. There's multiple ways to request it. And then we can go from there. Once we get that form, then we can kind of go through and see what they're eligible for. So it's very individualized, which makes the entire system even more confusing and complicated because it's different for everyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
That really is.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to know a lot. And I mean, I'm not one to say that I know everything. I have a Code of Federal Regulations that sits on my desk because I don't have all the answers. And we all work together to try to find them.
Wow.
Yeah. Man. So you can imagine how difficult it is for an individual to try to navigate this system on their own and how frustrating that is for someone.
Yeah. I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding how it's not that frustrating for you, how you can be so cheery and personable at 9 in the morning, 10 in the morning.
You know, my dad was in the military, my uncles were, my grandparents, my cousins. I have a long history of military in my family, and I just wanted to do something to make it better for our veterans. I have an understanding of what they go through because I grew up in that life, and when I was younger, there was not the services that are available today, that they didn't even exist, and so now they're starting to exist, and so I want to make sure that people are knowing about these services and they can get access to them and be taken care of. And at the end of the day, if I can help one person make their life a little bit better, that's all that matters. That's all I focus on.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes after I refill my coffee. And we will continue the Kenai conversation. I'm talking with Megan James. She's the executive director of the Alaska Coalition for Veterans and Military Families.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Kenai Conversation here on Public Radio, KDLL, 91.9 FM. I'm Jay Barrett, and my guest today is Megan James. She is the Executive Director of the Alaska Veterans and Military Families Coalition, an organization dedicated to pretty much exactly what its title says. They are bring together people and organizations. Collaboration and advocacy, I think, was the key words you said. And education, isn't that right?
Absolutely. Those are the three.
Yeah. We were talking off the air about how issues for veterans have changed over the years. My dad was a World War II veteran. I don't actually know how he came back. I mean, I'm sure it was on a transport ship to Portland or something. You know, and then I'm old enough to have Vietnam-era friends who... you know, some of them, what's the word? More affected than others.
Mm-hmm. Some I would go with that.
Less affected. And, you know, I got one buddy down in Kodiak, actually. Mm-hmm. He's an old fellow now. He's probably 80, I think. He's pretty close to 80. Lives in his van. Mm-hmm. Very clean. I mean, just super fastidious. And he's got a great dog, best trained dog I've ever met.
Aww.
And he refuses to have anything to do with the VA.
And that's okay.
Yeah, and anytime there's anything, you know, in Kodiak that has anything to do with it, I say, dude, let's go over there. You know, they might be able to help. He goes, you know, same thing as the caller we had, you know, bad experiences for him. And, you know, I guess that's just his lot in life now, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I want to help everyone and help as many as I can, but I, like we were talking off air, I try to focus on the positive and try to help as best as I can. And some people are just not going to, A, be happy with what's happening, or B, there might not be services. And I learned a long time ago that you have to focus on the ones that you can save. And it's heartbreaking to me, but I try my hardest, and that's what I try to focus on. And for our caller that called in, if he wants to give it another go, I would gladly, it doesn't have to be me. We can get him connected to wherever he wants to go and try to fix that problem, because, you know, pushing pills on an individual is not the answer for any kind of problem. And, you know, I just want our veterans to be living their best life. And if they want to live in their van and clean with their best trained dog in the world, then have at it, man. Like, be happy with your life, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. What are some of the differences you've seen between generations of veterans? Between, you know, I don't know if you see very many World War II veterans in your work, but, you know, Korea, Vietnam, and then, you know, the Gulf Wars.
Yeah. I've had a couple of experiences with World War II veterans. They're mostly Alaska Territorial Guard members. Man, are they the coolest people to talk to? So if you're not familiar with the Territorial Guard, these were the Alaska Natives that were on the coastal areas that...
under Muktuk Marston.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And they have some of the coolest stories, because a lot of them were just boys, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old. So, you know, they had to be 18, but a lot of them, they didn't know when they were born, so they don't know, or what year they were born, so they don't know. And so they just have some of the coolest stories. My grandfather was a World War II veteran, Korea veteran, and a Vietnam veteran. So he went to all three. And some of the differences that we kind of saw and stuff that I've talked to my grandpa before he passed away in 2014 is that the World War II veterans they left their community together. They went to war together. They came back usually on transporter ships, which are longer duration. So they were able to talk and process through their traumas. They re-entered their communities together, and they didn't have technology to, you know, where they could isolate themselves on their technology. So they were still communicating. And that's not to diminish the traumas. They just had a different way of processing it, which allowed them to be have a more successful integration, for lack of a better word. Our Korean War veterans, very similar. And then our Vietnam veterans, unfortunately, it was a war that at the time no one wanted. And at the time, society was taking out on our returning veterans and our returning service members. And some of the saddest ways possible. And so our Vietnam veterans closed down. They didn't self-identify. They didn't access benefits. And there wasn't the plethora of benefits that are available today on top of that. And so it was much more traumatic experience, not only going to war, but trying to come back and reintegrate into society. And so we have several folks that are of that Vietnam era. They're currently working in this space. And so when we get those individuals that are seeking services and really do want the help, that we try to connect them to people from their era so they feel more comfortable as they go through and talk about their traumas, because sometimes these are traumas they haven't discussed for 40 years now.
Oh.
So this could be the first time they've been talking about their experiences. And so we want all of our individuals to feel comfortable. And so we try to pair them with service providers that kind of match them. So then that way they're more comfortable sharing their stories. Even if it's just employment, like we want, you know, people to feel comfortable where they're at so that that way they can have a better transition experience.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've interviewed a lot of veterans, and, you know, you talk about the going to war and going to battle and the camaraderie and, the philosophy, why you're there and all this. The one thing I've never been able to ask anyone is how many people did you kill? You know, because,
oh, please don't ask that.
Yeah, I know. And it's because, you know, it's like, you know, I really don't want to ask somebody how many people they've killed, even though that was their job.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Well, not necessarily, but yeah, well, that's the crux of going to combat.
Yeah. And, I think what I'm trying to say is that the reason I don't ask that is because I worry about some of these effects that you're talking about, you know, like with Vietnam veterans, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I would rather not trigger them.
Right.
You know, I would like to be polite to them. But yet, you know, I think it's, I'm sure a lot of people weren't putting notches on their gun stocks, but, you know, it was kind of their job.
You know, my dad explained it to me one time. So my dad was a pathfinder in the infantry. And he did deploy to some combat zones. He deployed to a few places that were in active civil war during his service. And the one thing that my dad always told me, that a life is a life. And even though he was trained to take that life and trained to make that split decision the way a civilian were not trained to make those split second decisions, and that he had to be comfortable with his split second decision for the rest of his life. And that a life is a life, and asking that question, you know, it revisits that. And so, I mean, even if you, I've never taken a life, I couldn't tell you what it feels like, but I know that from my dad's experience that a life is a life at the end of the day. And no matter if they're a Vietnam War veteran, World War II, you should never, ever, ever ask that question of a veteran, period. And it's sad how many times I have to tell people that, to not ask that question.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, well, I guess it's good that they're out there not asking it.
Yeah.
Or wondering if they shouldn't ask it.
Yeah, just please don't. There's actually, on our website, akcvmf.org, under the continuing education tab, we have a partnership with a group called PsychArmor, and they do online webinars. They're about, I think the shortest one's like 5 minutes and the longest one's like 45 minutes. Log in through our website so we can keep numbers on how many people that we have put through their trainings, and take the 15 things every service member or every veteran wants you to know. It's something like that. It's 15 things is the name of it. And it gives you kind of the crash course of, please don't ask this, please don't ask that. But it's okay to ask this. And it just kind of gives, it sets a really good set of boundaries and parameters for a civilian who's interacting with a service member or veteran. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like 15 minutes long. It's super short. You can watch it, you know, on your lunch break or your, you know, break room break. And it's a great video for anyone to watch.
Wow. Let's talk about your website a little bit. It is full of resources here.
Yeah.
But looking at it, it looks like that's a full-time job, just maintaining your website. But tell us what kind of resources folks can find there in addition to the one you just told us about.
Yeah, so the Continuing Education tab has three different online providers for training. PsychArmor is our premier partnership, and they have partnered with us and provided us a portal so that we can track how many people we can get through their PsychArmor courses. And that, you know, at the end of the day, it's about numbers for number crunching and funding and all that jazz. So that's why I'm like, please go through our website to do this. But they have hundreds of resource videos available for individuals, people who are a faith background or work in faith organizations. There's trainings for them specifically. There's trainings for attorneys on military matters. There's training for behavioral health providers. There's training for teachers. And then there's just trainings for general users. And then we also have for the Center for Deployment Psychology on there. They have a wonderful multi-part, very long and very intensive military cultural training. And I believe that also comes with continuing education credit. So if a provider needs CEUs to continue practicing, that's a great resource for military culture. And then we also have the VHA train, which is the VA, and I think that there's several other federal agencies come together, and they provide all of their trainings for free. So you'll find not only veteran trainings, you'll find other trainings from other various Department of Education, Department of Agriculture, etc. So.
Mm-hmm. And what do the folks have to sign up for these through your website?
All of these are free. So if you click the logo, it'll take you directly to the outside agency, and you just basically log in or create a profile and log in, and then you get set up that way.
Oh, I mean, do they have requirements? I'm like, would they need your DD-214?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Nope. Just most of them, it's name, email, and, you know, permission to send you stuff on occasion, or you agree to the site terms. Pretty easy stuff.
Right. Wow. You know, what else I found on your website was a summit. You had a summit. Here it is. Tell me about that. What was going on there?
Yeah, that was back in March of this year. It was our first one we've ever done. And our idea was to bring together the service providers, veterans, and military families into one room and provide a day of education and networking. Because at the crux of all of this is networking is so vital to being able to build that safety net and getting the job done. And so we had three general sessions on a main stage, and then we had a total of 12 breakout sessions on things like the USARA law, which governs National Guard and Reserve member civilian employment. We had a class on spouse licensure in Alaska. We had suicide prevention. We had child and youth issues. We had art-based therapy learning class. And then we also had a panel, one of our general session panels, which I was really excited about, was Alaska Native Veteran Issues. And so we had some of the leading Alaska Native veterans on stage discussing the issues that they've seen in their communities. And it was a wonderful experience. We had 100 people attend in person, and it was the very first training we ever offered via webinar. And so we had 44 people call in. And we are in the process of planning that for next year. We're looking at end of March timeframe again. We're going to have two different tracks this time. We're going to have a track for service providers, and then we're going to have a track for veterans and military families.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So then that way because we were noticing that some of the information wasn't necessarily pertinent to either group, but some veteran benefits question and answer session. Service providers probably not going to go to it, but it was filled with veterans.
Ah, sure.
And so, and then USARA, our individual veterans don't really care about that, but our employers do. And so they were filling that one. So we're going to have two different tracks this year and build it out. Probably going to be a 2-day. We're looking at contacting childcare so spouses can come and bring the kids, drop them off for a day of activities with a licensed childcare provider for free. And then they can also attend those classes and things with their spouses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
When are you thinking of having it?
We like to tie it into Vietnam Veteran Memorial Day, which is March 29th of every year. And so we want to be able to have that again because we were able to honor two Vietnam veterans last year at the end of the day. And I think this year we're going to honor them at lunch. So then that way they have full participation and full attendance. And so that those Vietnam veterans can really feel the love from the community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. What other upcoming events, what's on your personal schedule? Tomorrow night you've got Soldotna City Council, where you're going to give them your elevator speech.
Yeah.
Is that what you do on, once a month you go on a road trip, or?
I wish it was only once a month.
The rest of the month you're working on your website?
No, thankfully I do have one intern right now, and so she's at home. In Anchorage, kind of holding the fort down and checking emails and getting cases uploaded into our system and getting them processed. So thank God for her. She has been a lifesaver. But I like to, part of it is I travel. I brief commanders on the installation. I brief commanders that are in the armories. I connect with some of our service providers, our vet centers, our community-based outpatient clinics, are all VA and DOD entities. But then I also go into the community and talk to nonprofit agencies, faith organizations, and just general outreach. That's primarily the travel that I do in our state. And then I go back to D.C. a couple of times a year. And Georgia a couple of times, or once a year, for annual conferences. And those conferences are wonderful resources for Alaska, because I've able to bring back the newest best practices. I'm able to connect with the individuals who are at the forefront of research in any of those issues. And I've also was able to connect with an entity called Cohen Veteran Network, which provides outpatient behavioral health and counseling for service members and their families. And they are actually in the process of opening a clinic in Anchorage. I fought really hard for it to be in Fairbanks, but they chose Anchorage, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with any additional capacity. But my hope is to get them up to Fairbanks too, so that way Fort Greeley and Clear are right there on the road system. Kenai, most of the year is pretty easy to get to Anchorage from here. But I really want them to connect with other hub and spoke type communities so that we can get the greatest reach with the least amount of capital required.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, one of the things I noticed, I guess I noticed it earlier this year, but the Kana Clinic, the Kanaitse Indian Tribes Clinic here in town, they see veterans under contract. And I think they do that in Kodiak as well at the, that's Canna in Kodiak. I'm sorry, the Denina Clinic here.
Yeah.
That's why you gave me a blank look. It's not the Canna Clinic, the Denina Clinic.
Yeah, actually, that is unique to Alaska.
Oh, really?
Veterans can go and access services at any tribal clinic in the state of Alaska. And then the VA has a memorandum of agreement to reimburse those tribal clinics directly, so that way the veteran can stay in their community and they don't have to travel to Anchorage. I mean, unless it's like a bigger thing that they need services for, but they can go for routine care. They can go for, just routine, like they have a cold or they need their eyes checked or upgrade to hearing aids or whatever. They can go to their community tribal clinic and receive those services. And when the Choice Act was initially put into place, that kind of messed everything up for us. And so that's why the Mission Act, that's one of the reasons why the Mission Act came out. And our Office of Veterans Affairs Director, Verdi Bowen, actually wrote the paragraph with our U.S. congressional delegates to have a paragraph in there specifically for Alaska to exempt us from some of that so that we could keep our agreements in place with our tribal clinics.
Oh, no kidding.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's great.
And the other thing I like to point out with those agreements that are really cool is the VA tends to reimburse at a higher rate than private insurances. So when a veteran is seeing a clinician in their area, they're actually bringing more money into their community.
Oh, yeah.
And the VA will also tends to give the best of the best for equipment, for mobility equipment or whatnot, so that when a veteran is done using that equipment, there's other people in their communities that can use it. And as you get more rural, that collective living tends to become more prevalent. And so accessing benefits through the tribal clinics is a great way to get services right where you live.
Yeah. And, you know, those clinics are actually, very competent, very modern and high-tech. And
absolutely.
Know, yeah, they've got great doctors.
Absolutely.
Pharmacies, nurses, all nine yards. We only have a minute or two left. Anything I should have asked you here today that I haven't, or anything you'd like to add for our listeners to take away with here?
Yeah, you know, I just want people to know that if they've made that first step and it was difficult or it was hard or they got told no and they shut down after that or they just chose not to go after services, if you ever change your mind, we're here for you. We want you to have the best services that you could possibly need. And it doesn't need to be mental health. It can be behavioral, or excuse me, it can be employment. It can be legal services. It can be a question about child and youth services. Whatever the case may be, if you're a veteran, a service member, or a family member, you can come to the Coalition and we can help you find what you need. And we will do our very best to connect you with services where in the community where you live, so it's not a burden to you. That's why we're here.
That is an amazing mission.
Thank you.
Megan James, thank you very much. The Executive Director of the Alaska Coalition for Veterans and Military Families. They do great things, and they can put you in touch with people who do great things as well. Thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, anytime I get to talk about work for uninhibited for an hour, I'm all about it.
Oh, boy. And if you folks want to hear more, she'll be speaking before the Soldotna City Council tomorrow night. That's at 6 o'clock down in Soldotna. So, thanks again.
All right, thank you.
This episode of the Kenai Conversation was recorded on Wednesday morning, October 9th. If you heard dated references or the phone number, I hope you just ignore them.